This is our third session of the day. We started this morning in Minocqua and just left Eagle River, and now we're back here in Rhyadr. And welcome to all of you joining us here at Nicolet College as well. You can't take your frustrations out on us because the Packers lost last night. Just know that's the only ground rule we have. We explained that at both the other two listening sessions. It seemed to work out pretty well. So I enjoy traveling with Senator Tiffany on these listening sessions. We try to do them when we can. This particular time of year is real important to us because the governor will be introducing his budget in the next couple of weeks in Madison. So we want to get your thoughts, your input on the next upcoming budget. It's good for us to put a face to the name. The one-on-one conversation is something I always appreciate. So I want to thank everybody for taking time out this afternoon to join us. Senator?
Yeah, great to be here. Great to have you all here. Boy, we really had a good turnout all three sessions today, which is greatly appreciated, and look forward to hearing from you.
So we will start. Where's Rick and Nancy Mabry?
Right here.
There you are.
Right.
Yeah, so you guys have frequent flyer miles in my office regarding broadband, right?
We do. Yeah. We do. Now, I don't want to go over old stuff. This is regarding two new recent articles that I just saw.
Okay.
One was in the Lakeland Times, and one, I believe, was on Channel 12, but I can't remember. I copied it off their website. Now, according to this, there's supposed to be 11 sites due to the Oneida County EDC with grant money, and six of the 11 are already up and running, and the five remaining ones are what I've got my question about, because it says two will be in Cassian and Harshaw, two in Three Lakes, one in Crescent, and I saw one about north of Lake Tomahawk. Okay, we're just south of Lake Tomahawk. I don't think the one north of Lake Tomahawk will help us.
Right.
I'm trying to find out about the Cassian and Harshaw.
The Oneida County Economic Development Corporation is the one that is very active locally on broadband expansion. So we help them on the state level. But when it comes down to the local stuff, they would have the information on exactly what's going on with those specific towers.
Okay, because that's the first time I've heard Roger.
Yeah, Roger Luce, L-U-C-E.
L-U-C-E.
Yeah, okay. give Roger a call.
Okay, because I mean, I'm curious because one of them, and this is why it caught my eye, is the other article was about one that is supposed to go up either Harshaw or Cassian.
Yep.
And this man is actually building his own tower.
Oh, I saw that article,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, well then I went to look up this man online because I wanted to contact him,
uh-huh.
And I phoned him. This was 2016, but he was actually a member from Harshaw of the Oneida County EDC.
Mm-hmm.
And it led me thinking, okay, you've got to be a member of this committee to build your own tower to get a grant?
Yeah, probably. He might have even provided the land for the tower itself.
Well, it looks like he's actually starting his own company, building a tower.
Could be.
I mean, yeah. I just want to know how you get in on this. I'm looking at the 4 miles, and depending on where it is.
Sure.
Yeah, you do not have to be a member of the Economic Development Corporation in order to do that. Phil Heitmanek is just a highly motivated individual in terms of getting broadband. The other thing that I might suggest to you is contact Northwoods Connect, the Osterman brothers. Contact them because they're the ones that have gotten the latest grant, and they're using wireless technology rather than fiber to roll theirs out.
And so PSC is working on it as well. And we know, and thanks for your patience, because broadband, especially Lake Tomahawk, for some unknown reason, it's been a very frustrating pocket of no service.
It is.
Yeah. And actually, broadband, I would argue, almost it's been the number one topic all day today.
Thank you. Yep. I don't want to monopolize everything. So
no, that's fine.
I'll just do that.
Yeah. Anybody else got any questions on broadband? Okay. Dr. Sky.
Yes, sir.
You have the floor. What is going to be your focus in the upcoming state budget regarding K-12? I'm going to start there.
Sure. Be happy to. Thanks for the question. K-12, always the biggest part of the budget. And I think the governor alluded to what he's going to propose in the upcoming budget at his State of the State address, where he said there's probably going to be more money requested for K-12 here in Wisconsin. And in particular, he alluded to more money outside of the funding formula, in other words, going into categorical aids, and which is something that's a real high priority for both Representative Swearingen and myself, because as we all know, the funding formula for many of our schools up here, they do not get as much money. And so it's a good thing to hear that it sounds like there's going to be more money put in via categoricals, which will be a good thing. So categorical aids being stuff like high-cost transportation aid, those type of things. And there's some schools up here that really benefited from that. And so I expect the question will be how much, Dorothy?
Yep, and he should be unveiling the budget sometime in the first week or two of February. So all eyes are on K-12. I mean, he's got to put more money into K-12, and it's got to be outside of the funding formula for it to help us. So it'll be interesting to see what the dollar amount is per pupil at that point. So we got our fingers crossed.
Could I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
Do you have any plans to introduce legislation or get on something going in regards to the funding formula? Because that's something they've been talking about since my kids were in grade school, high school. 30 years ago, they're 30 years old now. And nothing has ever been done about it. And it seems to me that that's one of the biggest drawbacks. Is because, you know, especially school districts with declining enrollment, they're not getting the money they used to get. Now they're not getting money from the local or from the state government. And with the new Secretary of Education, who our wonderful president wants in there, she's talking about defunding public education as well. And my concern, not only about just the normal students, what about the special needs kids and all the programs that are federally funded now? What's going to happen to those programs, and what can you do to ensure or to shore up the educational quality in Wisconsin?
Right. So the funding formula has been continuing frustrating for me as well. Since I got elected, we've been talking about the funding formula, and you indicated 30 years. You're probably right. The bottom line is, as we sit here today, first of all, let me be clear, the funding formula works for the majority of the state, just not so well up here, okay?
I'm originally from the Milwaukee area, Waukesha school system. That's where my kids went.
Right, how's it working for Waukesha? A hell of a lot better than it's working for up here.
No, because Waukesha, the city had not declining enrollment, but their enrollment was stagnant.
All right.
All around them was...
But for the majority of the state, the funding formula is constitutionally sound and works well. Matter of fact, there have been other states look at our funding formula as a model, if you can believe that. The problem is there isn't a legislator, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, that's going to vote to take away money from your district to send to other places in the state.
Right.
And that's been the rub. Now, this session, I found it very refreshing that Speaker Voss is interested and brought it up that we should be reexamining the funding formula. Now, that's a very tall order. Even the governor agrees with that, and the fact that it's going to be very difficult to change. So that's why we're focused on the categoricals, which we have been for years. So, I mean, we're still at the same spot, but certainly we've got more attention. But as we sit here, it remains unclear as to how they're going to attack the funding formula.
Is there anything you can do with introducing legislation or whatever you have to do to encourage the changing of that formula, because that really is what we're looking at.
Yeah, so during the budget process, K-12 will be front and center through that whole process. And so here's how I've handled it so far, the time that I've been in the legislature. We have the choice schools in southern Wisconsin, and we have many colleagues that's a priority for them, that the choice schools continue to stay intact, that they continue to be able to operate. And so what I've done is I've said, okay, if that's what the trade-off is, then I want more money in categorical aids, because categorical aids go back one for one every student in the state of Wisconsin. So that way we do not get shortchanged. So that's what I've done. Now, as far as changing the funding formula, it is a tall task. It is a tall task. And what happens is, so when there's a proposal made, and there's been a number of legislators, including Rob, that have run all kinds of different iterations of changing the funding formula. What's the first thing 132 legislators do when they see a change to the funding formula? They go and look at their school districts and see whether they do better or worse. And if most of their school districts do better, they're going to be for it. If most of them do worse, then they're not going to support it. And the various proposals that we've put forward, and Rob deserves a lot of credit for trying to find a variety of ways to try to do this when he served on the Rural Schools Task Force and has worked with a number of school boards up here. The proposals that have been put forward from up north here, most of the districts in the state do not do as well, whether represented by a Republican or a Democrat. And they immediately say, we do not support that. So it has not been via a lack of effort, but we have not been able to hit on that way in which to do it. It is good news that the Speaker of the Assembly has said that it'll be a priority of his to try to find a way. But I would be lying if I said we have the silver bullet to be able to do that. Yeah, I don't know what will happen at the federal level, but the thing that I'm hopeful of, and this is not true, this is true not only of education, but it's also true of healthcare and a few other issues, is I'm really hopeful that they're going to block grant that money back to us without strings attached. Because if you talk to the school administrators, it's not just sometimes that there's strings attached at the state level, but at the federal level. Especially when it has to do with children with disabilities, they're very structured in terms of how they allow that money to go back. You have to jump through a lot of hoops in order to get that money. And what I'm hopeful is that they'll give us more flexibility, block grant the money back to us without the strings attached, and allow us to be able to go from there. And that's what I'm hopeful will happen. We'll see what happens.
Just a quick follow-up question. Isn't it true, though, that if that money is block granted to the state with no strings attached, the state could theoretically use it for something other than education?
Theoretically, we could.
So it seems to me that that's a pretty, I mean, given that, that the current current governor and, frankly, the legislature haven't really placed education as a very high priority, isn't that sort of a risky thing? For us citizens, for that money to be block granted back, we've seen major reductions of funding at the collegiate level.
Yeah, I find it very doubtful that that money would be used for any purpose other than education. And as a parent who has three kids in the public schools, I'll fight tooth and nail to make sure that that money goes to our schools.
Yes, sir.
What percent of the total state spending on education is the federal money? Not that much, is it?
I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, I don't know. If you want to leave your name and phone number, we'd be happy to get the answer for you. But yeah, I don't know exactly how much that is. Anita Foss. Is Anita here?
I'm here. I just put down general concerns. I don't have any specific. I just want to maybe hear you talk about maybe some of the environmental issues or
sure.
The rural.
Sure. And I see you let off with environmental protection. I take it having a clean environment is important. I mean, that's, you want it to be a priority. Is that correct? Yeah. So do I. And I'll stretch that just a step further. We are steadily getting better as a society, as a country, as a state in terms of making sure that we have a clean environment. It's really been interesting to see some of the anecdotal stories that have come out over the last year that I've seen. Recently, it was shown that, bless you, it was shown that the eagle and osprey population, and as far as nest counts and things like that, is at its highest level ever, I think, in the state of Wisconsin. Loon population is, their numbers over this past year are at some of the highest levels they've been at. And there's a piece of data I found real interesting a couple years ago that I found in regards to our power plants in Wisconsin. Of course, we're a very coal-dependent state. Get about two-thirds of our electricity via coal, maybe a little bit less now, but it's been about two-thirds. And we've reduced sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide emissions by over 80% since the late 90s. So just a little over 15 years here, both of those pollutants have been really reduced significantly. That's a real success story and talks to our commitment in terms of making sure, and I say we as a society, our commitment to make sure that that we do the best that we can for the environment.
I do have a follow-up to that.
Yeah.
My name is Janice Kunisic, and I live on a small lake just south of Rhinelander. And I'm here today because I read in many papers that you are interested in changing our environmental policies in order to be more friendly to business. And I know the businesses that you in the past have advocated for are mining businesses, frack mining businesses, I believe the big corporate farms. I'm not sure about that though, you can correct me on that if you care to. And I guess I have to say I'm very disappointed in that focus. I live in northern Wisconsin. We live in northern Wisconsin because we love our natural environment. We love our lakes. We love our rivers. We love our clean water. And I don't see you as a steward of northern Wisconsin. I don't see you as an advocate for the people of northern Wisconsin because of your past focus on these companies that actually, as we saw in the Pinocchi, you know, can actually pretty much annihilate our environment, destroy our environment. You've also talked about, you're quoted in the River News or something like that as saying that one fracking sand pit company, corporation, could add 100 jobs to a local community, and you know that community would blossom. But I guess I would like to ask you to change your focus to ecotourism. If you're looking for jobs, ecotourism. Of course, let's fix our roads, my goodness. Put your energy into the potholes around here. How are we going to get tourists up here if they have to drive over potholes? But do it in such a way that's not going to sacrifice the environment. We need small, local, our small local farms need support, preferably organic. This is a natural trend, it's a state trend. We need help with that in local, in northern Wisconsin. And think of all the jobs in protecting the environment, in building roads, in farms. I volunteer at a small, wonderful organic farm here. They can't afford to pay people to pick the crops, my goodness. You know, let's give those people some support. The other thing is, you were quoted as saying that environmentalists have dogmatic beliefs, which I take to mean that environmentalists are unmovable in their approach. And I guess, you know, in the love of an environment, I think I am. But the way that was stated, the tone of that was not meant in that way. It was meant to trivialize someone who loves the environment. And I just recommend that you don't do that anymore. because all you're going to do is make me mad. I want you to listen to me.
You don't want to make me mad.
You're my
Thanks.
Representative. Please listen to this. I wrote up my four areas that I'd like to see you focus on. I wanted to ask you to make a pledge to change your focus as my senator to focus on these and not on something that is going to, that is even possible. We can't even take the chance of contaminating our water here. We just, you know, we just can't do that. So I'm rambling now, but you've heard me. Thank you very much for this listening session.
Yeah, I would just a couple brief comments. Yes, I did use that term, dogmatic. And the reason I did is because I do deal with some environmental groups in Madison that are dogmatic in their beliefs. There is no changing their minds. There is no alternative to what they're proposing. Having a clean environment and a healthy economy are not mutually exclusive. In fact, having good, sound environmental programs are dependent on our prosperity. Part of the reason, one of the things that we hear about frequently is the stewardship program to purchase those highest and best places. I think many of you are familiar with the program. You can't do that without some money in the state treasury. And if we do not have a robust economy, we're not going to have a stewardship program. In fact, you've seen it scaled back from $86 million back in the late, 07, 08, that period of time, to now where we're down to about $30 million with the stewardship program. That was a direct result of the budgetary woes we had of about 5, 6, 7 years ago. It had to be reduced. I mean, we could have taken the money from education or transportation or healthcare or something like that, but most people do not want us to make that choice. So we do have to have a growing economy in order to be able to fund those environmental programs.
I think the issues that I brought up, the four places where you could focus, would actually increase jobs in this area by far more than 100 that you had talked about in the article.
You do understand that those roads were going to fix used asphalt, and the fracking process brings out those hydrocarbons. That sand that comes from western Wisconsin brings up those hydrocarbons in order for us to have asphalt to fix our roads.
Fine.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
I had a follow-up question.
There's a gentleman.
Oh.
That was just it. We'll get you next.
Oh, okay. Next.
I was just going to say, I think, you know, earlier you mentioned the commitment that Wisconsin's had to the environment. And I guess I was just disappointed because the letter, I felt, just diminishes that commitment. The tone of the letter, it just kind of comes across as saying that the environment should take a back seat to the economy. We should disregard the environment for economic growth. I own waterfront property on Lake Juliet here. The water quality is of extreme importance to me. This weekend I went hiking around the lake and picked up beer cans and beer bottles and all kinds of stuff left behind. I think with the spread of aquatic invasive species, writing letters that are downplaying the importance of protecting the environment, I just don't think really help Northern Wisconsin.
And it's not meant to downplay the environment. It was to point out some of the people we deal with in Madison who...
I think the problem I had with the letter in general is it's slight and fast to the economic growth. I mean, if you would have cited something in particular that the current regulations were, you know, I guess prohibiting or stopping, that would have been one thing, but to just kind of throw out the 100 jobs number, you know, without actually citing, you know, what you're referencing in that regard, you know, there's just nothing there, really. I thought the Lake Association had a nice rebuttal letter that actually had some statistics about the economic impact of tourism in northern Wisconsin. So, I guess, it, like I said, I was just disappointed in the letter overall, but, you know, I think nowadays we need to really focus on protecting the environment just because the waters and get used so much more. There's so many more people out there, so telling people not to take care of it, I just think sends the wrong message.
Yeah, and I would say you misread the letter if you said we shouldn't care for the environment. And I have a history of doing a good job of protecting the environment, and I can show you that.
Well, this is a follow-up question with the environment. You're interested, I read, in repealing the Wisconsin moratorium law on sulfite mining that requires companies to prove that they are not, at least have one instance of proof that they're not going to be polluting the waters. Can you talk about that, please, and why you're interested in repealing this law? It was very popularly passed by a huge majority in this legislature.
So the question is, repealing the mining moratorium, which was put in place back in 1998, and what that bill did, and the statute states, is that there must be a mine that's found, a sulfide mine, that's found that's operated for 10 years and been operated safely with no emissions into the environment, or at least no emissions that exceed the requirements we have under law. Also, there must be shown that there's a mine that has been closed for 10 years. Same thing, no emissions that exceed the limitations that we have in state law. We have some of the toughest laws in the United States in regards to mining. Those laws were passed back in the early 1980s, and they have some of the most stringent standards. You'll find people across the political spectrum when that was passed back in the early 80s said, this is a model law. Well, there is a company, Flambeau Mining, over in Ladysmith that had that mine open back in the late 90s, and it's now been closed for over 10 years. It was contested that whether it was a clean closure. So it went to federal court to Judge Crabb, and Judge Crabb said that, she said that there is a small problem here with, for those, I won't get into the technicalities, but Stream C, that there are some emissions going out of Stream C, which is a small stream of water going over to the Flambeau River. She said, however, this company has done an exemplary job of closing this mine. So the company said, there is no problem with Stream C. We are going to appeal the ruling by Judge Crabb, and they did to an appellate court. And the appellate court came back, I think it was in 2013, either 13 or 14, and that court said that there are no emissions that violate the law in the state of Wisconsin. In effect, they were saying, this is a clean closure. So that's over the period of 10 plus years. So I believe that we've met the intent of the mining moratorium as it's stated in state statute. And therefore, the statute is no longer necessary. I'm not talking about changing any numeric standards in terms of emissions into the environment. There's nothing like that that will be included in a bill. So to your point, I will be introducing legislation probably within the next month that will call for the repeal of the mining moratorium law. I would emphasize to all of you, former Secretary George Meyer was on record back in 1998 as saying to the legislature, do not pass this bill. It will not have the impact that you think it will. And he strongly advocated against passing that bill. So anyhow, I believe we've met the standard that was put in the law and that the law is no longer needed.
Can you explain then why Professor Al Dennett is so against it?
Because that's Professor Al Gaddick's profession, is opposing minds.
Yes, it is. The facts, not alternative facts, the true facts.
Well, to your point, if you look at the case that went before the courts, I mean, even Judge Crabb said this was an exemplary closure. You have people within the Department of Natural Resources who they look back on it and they're proud of how that mine was managed and that there were no emissions exceeding what our laws state that go into the environment. So, we're going to go way in back there.
Just back to the follow up of asking if that bill will be considered and debated on its merits or snuck into a budget bill sometime.
This bill? This bill will be introduced as a standalone piece of legislation. And to your point, I have made it a priority with this bill to be very forthright with people about what is about to be introduced. I sought out a reporter from Channel 12 to do the interview that has led to multiple other interviews that I may be introducing this piece of legislation. I want people to know what my intentions are here so they can voice their opinion as you are. We're going to be fully transparent with this process as we go forward. We will have a public hearing. It'll be fully transparent. Yep. Why would you repeal the law? Two, I believe the law is moot at this point, and I don't believe we've had bills that have went through the legislature the last few sessions write the rules where there's laws that are on the books that are no longer valid, no longer needed. I see this in somewhat the same vein.
So you're saying
that it's no longer needed. But there's a second part to this, and this is what former Secretary Meyer emphasized. There was a mining company back in the late 90s that, under the law as it's written, you don't have to go to you can't go to a mine in Wisconsin other than Flambeau because there aren't any. There was a company that went out to Arizona and said, see, they closed this for 10 years, and I'm using this as my example to meet the intent of the law. This was out in desert high country. As Secretary Meyer said, that has nothing to do with Wisconsin, yet they were able to use that as an example for how they met the moratorium bill. I believe the most important thing for us to do is to maintain the high standards that we have here in Wisconsin and have a mine go through the permitting process. I don't think we should have moratoriums on business sectors like this. We should be able to permit these things or have a permitting process and then decide, can they meet the level of scrutiny that we require in Wisconsin or can they not? If they can, they get the permit. If they can't, they don't get the permit.
So you're saying that these standards would remain a law that they would have to follow?
For example.
Okay, we had 6 months without writing any speeding tickets, so clearly we don't need speed limits because everybody goes to speed limits.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, because we all got cruise control now because the technology is there. But, you know, and so that's how this is sounding to me. And I think sometimes, I'm not saying every big business, but many of them, they do get green pass, you know, and they bend the law and stuff. And so that's my concern, I guess, is that are there little feet going to be held to the fire so that they will continue to meet these really high standards, which I think are ultimately vitally important to life on the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, we are going to have to stop on this issue after this because we've got a lot more slips. And for example, go to NR 140. Those are the administrative rules that dictate what's the threshold emissions into groundwater. There will be no changes in this bill to NR 140. We are not changing the numeric standards for emissions into the environment. Nothing like that is happening. They still have to go through the same permitting process that we have in law currently.
I'm sorry, and you can just tell by how what you're talking about is, I'm looking for a clarification. This seems to be taking so much of your energy and so much of your effort. Is this something that is, do you believe mining is needed in this area? Is this coming from your constituents? I don't understand, and perhaps I admit I'm naive, but this is taking so much of your energy. Can you tell us what this energy will serve us? How it will serve us? Are there mines you wish to come in? I just don't understand. It's the amount of energy you're putting in.
Sure. First of all, I can multitask. So there's lots of bills that my office is looking at introducing on a wide variety of topics. That is not a problem. You look at my tie here. It's got the symbol of the state of Wisconsin on it. And there's a miner on there. And we have left mining behind as part of our economic development in the state of Wisconsin. And we will not reach our economic potential as a manufacturing state. We're number two in the country behind Indiana in terms of manufacturing output per capita. We've always been a manufacturing state. It's been the source of so many good middle class jobs. I hope that we can continue that. And when you look at many of the materials that are needed these days for energy efficiency, like you take lights that come on automatically in a bathroom rather than having to flip a switch and the lights go off when you leave. Many of those energy saving gadgets they use minerals within them. They use those materials to be able to do that. I mean, take a Toyota Prius. My latest research shows that there's 64 pounds of copper in a Toyota Prius. We need these materials to be able to conduct our daily life. I mean, how many of you drove a car here?
But I don't think that's the response, and I'm really sorry.
But it is part of, have natural resources to be able to create those things.
We all understand the issues of asphalt. We all understand the lights. But there is a balance, and there is an effort to be exerted in achieving that balance. My only question is, all of this energy to get the mineral, is there the energy to save the mountain? Is there the energy to save the planet we live on?
That's why we have the rigorous standards that we have in law. That's the balance. We really got to move on.
What Bob said, you're insisting that you and your colleagues are going to provide this scrutiny, but I know Governor Walker, who signed these bills, and many people in the legislature, and I think you may be one of them, get contributions from these mining companies. So how then can you, in good faith, say that you're going to provide fair and free scrutiny when you're, in common parlance, in the pocket of the mining company?
Read the mining statutes that are administered by the state of Wisconsin.
Representative Swearingen, would you support that legislation?
Once I see legislation, I can comment on it. Right now, I haven't seen any bill.
Well, you know enough about it from what he said.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I can tell you honestly, Tom just talked about this in the last couple weeks. Nobody has contacted me regarding it one way or the other at this point.
And I've had no discussions with Rob in regards to this.
Well, no, but he's listening to the same as we are.
Sure.
Terry Goldbach. Did I get that right?
Yes. I would like to talk about a pollution in Crescent Lake.
Okay.
And I also have another gentleman here that would like to talk about it. It's a natural pollution.
Afterwards, during the four.
Oh, you guys are with the credit? Okay.
You want to go into where you
talked to him? Yeah.
Okay, you've talked to him? Okay, yeah. That's basically it. We are talking about environment. and there is natural pollutions, and in this particular case, it's region water milfoil.
Sure.
And
we can talk about now because Tom's got a hard deadline. If you want to take a couple of minutes now.
I'll just take some real quick, and then we'd like to spend a few more minutes with you, Rob.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
We have experienced milfoil in our lake. We had for a number of years, 12, 15 years, we had been working on keeping it out. We knew that at some point it would be in, it would come. And we have done what the DNR has asked us to do, and it has not stopped the invasion that we are experiencing, and it's growing rapidly, more rapid than what we had thought. And basically the DNR is not going to permit us at this time to take a more aggressive action in trying to control it. And we are going to be, we are asking your involvement with the DNR to assist us in getting some remediation for it. It is a different sort of environmental degradation, and we don't feel that the DNR is providing the assistance that they should be.
Yeah, I know we had a meeting scheduled that the weather got in your guys' way coming down.
Jerry, if I could just add one more thing and then probably hook up again later.
Sure.
We have such a great opportunity at this point to handle our problem within months, in other words, early spring. And it's a situation where we can really do it in a very small part of the overall lake, and to the point of it could be 1%, 1.5% of the entire lake. And so with that opportunity, that's really something that we can really take off on. And we have to work harder with the DNR and others, and it's not always going that well for us.
Because you're talking about chemical treatment, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
And then I'll stop here right away. But so if that doesn't happen next spring and into next year, that 1% of the lake could easily be 5%, 10%, 20%, which does happen on a lot of the other lakes. So that was just my comment there, is that, boy, if we can get rolling on this, I think we can really do some great things and really stay away from some pretty terrible things down the line.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming. I apologize that the weather got in you guys' way a couple weeks ago, because we had DNR ready to go, and we're going to have a good meeting, and ultimately it didn't happen.
Yep.
And then Jim went to Florida.
A lot of ice on there, unfortunately.
Yeah, right.
By the way, in regard, just more overall, in regards to aquatic invasives, for both Representative Swearingen and myself, it really is something that we're trying to find more money to be able to put into that. Representative Meyer was successful almost 10 years ago of getting that money dedicated to aquatic invasives, and we would really like to try to find a way to increase that. I know I looked real hard last budget trying to do that, was unsuccessful, but hopefully we can get more money at some point into the fight against invasives.
Yeah, fortunately the money hasn't gone down, but I will tell you this, there's also something, and you and I have talked about terrestrial invasives. Wild parsnip up in Florence County, they're really worried about it up there, among other things.
Yep.
And there isn't any money set aside right now for terrestrial invasives, because it isn't quite as sexy as the aquatic invasives.
Yep.
So that's something else that might chew into some of that same pot of the money. I hope not, but at least AIS hasn't gone down, the money.
Lori Grosskopf.
I wanted to thank Senator Tiffany and Representative Jarko for organizing a summit last fall. It was one of the best world conferences I've ever been to, and I've been to plenty of them. I am the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation representative on the DNR's Bold Committee, and I'm also a volunteer tracker in three of the DNR's units. I see fellow tracker Dorothy Skye is here, and maybe some of the rest of you are volunteering for this too. We're working with a statewide group of farmers and others who are concerned about natural resources to have a second summit, and it's going to be in Sugar Camp on April 8th. On a Saturday. So I want to invite Rob and Senator Tiffany, if they'd like to attend and maybe say a few comments. We're at the Sugar Camp Town Hall, and there'll be more data coming out about it. So I just wanted to thank him for getting on the ball with this topic. It's looking kind of like there's going to be some changes in the management of that program. So we want to do our best to inform the public. We're having some state and federal people come in and talk about wolf management, as well as some people who've been directly affected by the presence of wolves.
I would just add these comments in regards to the delisting of the Timberwolf. Montana and Idaho received that authority about 6 years ago, and without judicial review, we are asking the same thing here in the Great Lakes states and Wyoming. There is a bill drafted with bipartisan support that has happened in the last week or so. I'm fairly optimistic that we will see delisting of the Timberwolf here without judicial review happening in 2017. We don't know that for certain, but signals are pointing in that direction. And it's important to not have the judicial review, because that's what's ping-ponged the issue back and forth. The delisting would happen, and then a judge would say under the Endangered Species Act that no, they belong on there. So you end up going back and forth. It's really important to do this. For those of you, and I know many of you in here, are very concerned about the Endangered Species Act, and you believe it's a very important provision in federal law. If a species is no longer endangered, it's important that it be delisted. I don't know if that's ever happened, but in this case, you do have a species that is no longer endangered. And if you don't take it off from the endangered species law list, you're probably going to lose the support of the public. Because I can tell you, I talk to a lot of people that question the value of the Endangered Species Act at this point. The Endangered Species Act is important. We want to keep it as law. But when a species is no longer endangered, it's important that it comes off. And that's the case with the wolf at this time, in my opinion. So anyhow, I think there's a good chance we may see delisting.
Jim?
Thank you. First of all, I want to pay a compliment to both of you. In a time of need, approximately a month and a half ago, when I reached out to both of you, and you were right there on the spot to help us. I'm Jim Altenberg. I'm the transit manager for Oneida Wireless Transit Commission, our new public transit system. We were going through a plight where I needed some help because of federal funding coming in a proper timely manner. Both of these gentlemen right here stepped up to the plate immediately for my help, to help me, I should say. You know, our public transit system is here for everybody in Oneida and Vilas County. And it's very important. As I look at this youthful group that we have in front of us here, okay, and I like you, am very concerned about our environment. But you know what, in my life, what my priority is? You. Where you're going in the next 10, 15 years of your lives, smooth transitions of getting vehicles. Even all the people that just drove here right now, these people are here, have shown me how much they're here to help me. But as we're going forward in the future with rural transit is more important than ever, because Vilas County, number one per capita seniors in the state of Wisconsin, Oneida, number four. So the two counties that I take care of for public transit have number one and number four per capita seniors. Now the transit's open for everybody, okay? But please, can you inform me any more about the transit budget that Governor Walker put out? And where do you see this going for our rural transit system with the Wisconsin DOT? Have you heard any rumblings, anything going on there that we can, because it's very well needed for us.
I've heard no specifics, Jim, in regards to what the budget proposal will look like for Northwoods Transit.
Yeah, we'll know in a couple weeks.
And just so you know, my co-partner here, the director of the Department of Aging.
She looks familiar. Here.
We work as a tandem along with Vilas.
But I'm here to keep him in line.
She's here to keep me in line. But again, I just wanted you to know that these folks, the minute I reached out to them, they were there to help protect what we're putting for all of you for the future of our two counties here, okay?
And if you hear something before we do in the next 2 weeks after the that portion of the budget is introduced, let us know what you're finding.
If you have any insight, please let me know, please.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
And I would just say, with the Fiscal Bureau estimates that came out last week in regards to state finances, in particular in regards to tax collections, I would think you will not see a reduction. Whether you get an increase will be the question, Jim, I think. That'll probably be the question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you just quick comment on your support for the gas tax or not, or funding for roads? Just, I know somebody had mentioned the potholes.
Yeah, well.
You, I guess, your thoughts on increasing gas tax?
So, the governor has doubled down and kind of dug in on his position not to raise taxes, with a caveat saying that that unless there's a cut elsewhere in the budget. So our speaker, Robin Voss, is challenging the governor on that thought, saying that we need to quit kicking the can down the road and put some money into the roads, the road fund. So none of us went to Madison to raise taxes, but we are maintaining the stance that we think everything should be on the table for discussion. So whether it's raising registrations, licensing trailers, the gas tax, a nickel maybe, or tolling. And even though tolling is probably a year or two down the road, that should also be part of the discussion. So last week, it was announced that we got some good numbers from the Fiscal Bureau on better revenue. So since the governor said no new tax without a cut, the assembly speaker said let's take some of that new money and put it into tax cuts in exchange for a revenue upper in transportation. So let's take 300 here, cut it, and put 300 into transportation. Keep in mind, we're almost $1 billion short in transportation. So, and that kind of does what the governor wants, right? If he's not going to give us any new taxes without a cut, we gave him this option. And this story probably got lost in the inauguration all weekend long. So I don't know if it'll start heating up now. But the ball now is kind of in the governor's court in terms of how he's going to be receptive to this thought, to this idea. I would argue that the majority of the assembly is open to this idea or some sort of a revenue upper. Personally, tolling for me, I thought was probably a pretty good idea, probably because it really didn't affect the Northwoods. But we know that we'll need a waiver from now the Trump administration, and then obviously, like I said, a couple of years before it gets implemented. The governor will release his budget in the next couple of weeks, and we will see if the transportation portion of the budget has changed in terms of what he's proposing. Keep in mind, we just lost our Secretary of Transportation. I did serve on the Transportation Committee in the Assembly up until just about 2 weeks ago. And we were able to have the, at that time, current Secretary of DOT testify on the needs of the department. Largely, the testimony was based on a report that came out a couple of years ago, where at the same time, this gentleman was on that committee that issued the report, asking and saying that the Wisconsin's highways were deteriorating. And yet, now that he was Secretary of DOT, under Governor Walker, of course, his budget reflected Governor Walker's wishes. So that's where the rub is. That's where we're at right now. I would say stay tuned for at least the next couple of weeks to see what happens in the budget. And then we'll see if the Assembly, and I'm not speaking for the Senate, I think they have some views over there as well. But the Assembly at this point is not backing Governor Walker in terms of his initial, we need to do something.
So
you don't want Wisconsin to toll?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't sound right.
Okay.
Doesn't sound like a good place to have a toll.
So there are others that disagree. obviously, it's a user fee. If you're using the roads coming in and out of the state of Wisconsin, just like going into Illinois or wherever, Indiana, you pay the toll, especially using those federal highways. So the thought is tolling might, and it's kind of a big might solve close to the $1 billion problem we have. Keep in mind, it's going to take a couple of years to get it, first of all, approved and then built. Is the state in the tolling business? Are they able to run these tolls? Would they be privatized out to another company? I mean, these are all questions that would have to be asked. Up here, we wouldn't see, you know, the impact of tolling.
I have to tell you, this is a great debate we are having in Wisconsin in regards to transportation. And I know a lot of people have expressed great frustration. Why don't you just get a solution or whatever? there's a lot of moving parts here. Tolling? No. Raise a gas tax? I mean, are we being as effective and efficient as we can possibly be with the $7 billion we spend every couple years? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here. And I think it's a great debate, and we're ultimately going to get to an answer, and I think we're going to get to a good answer. I'd give you a couple things that I just feel very strongly about. There's an engineering group that came out and said we had the third worst roads in the country this summer, and it was really touted by the people who wanted just raise that gas tax, just raise the gas tax. Folks, have you traveled in other states?
Yes.
We do not have the third worst roads in the country. Now, we have roads that need to be fixed, but we do not have the third worst roads in the country, and they should not be saying that. The other thing that I want to say before I go any further, you can count on Representative Swearingen and I, we are going to fight for rural and northern roads. We've had the mega projects built in southern Wisconsin. It is time to make an investment here in the north. And the governor's already made a commitment to put more money in. I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to up the ante on that a little bit. But we are going to get more money for our local units of government here with this next budget. I'm going to give you an example of how there's some nuance to this issue. Going through the last budget, I asked Legislative Fiscal Bureau, nonpartisan, about traffic counts. Our traffic counts in 2014, how did they match up with the projections in 2004? In other words, how good is our forecasting at the state level? It turns out that the forecasts made in 2004 were 15% higher than the actual traffic counts in 2014. 15% higher. So in other words, we had 1 in 7 less cars than they were projecting in 2004. Now that is not a criticism of the DOT, because in 2004, traffic counts were going like this. So, I mean, they used the best knowledge that they had. What happened in the ensuing 10 years? A recession, 08 and 09, and you got the millennials coming on who drive much less than we do. So it's people's driving habits have changed somewhat. So I dug a little bit deeper. I took a look at two major expansions of highways here in Wisconsin, both over $100 million projects. And they gave us the reasoning to do these expansions is the projected increase in traffic counts. Those two segments of highway that I looked at, the traffic counts have not moved in 10 years. We really need to look at this in a detailed way as far as how we're spending your money, because you pay one of the highest gas taxes in the country. And maybe we should raise the gas tax at the end of the day. But my position is, let's do the other parts first. Effectiveness, efficiency. Let's make sure we're spending your dollars appropriately first before we go and raise your gas tax. And by the way, I do believe the gas tax is a user fee, that it's a good proxy for how much we drive, and it's the best way. I prefer that over tolling and increasing registration fees, because we pick up about 15% out-of-state revenue when we put it on the gas tax rather than on registration fees.